Hey, Pronosis, welcome back. We've got an incredible episode. Tyler at TC Screen Printing. Wow, we dug deep. Van life, live experiences, diving deep into cycling leagues. I mean,
57,000 square foot facility.
Yeah, lease first buy. We went into a lot, and then of course had to touch on DTF and Tyler's investment there. But why? I think that's the most important part. Why he's looking at it and how he's balanced that decision.
I wanted to bring TC on because he is going through all the should I buy a machine? Where am I at in the process? And I think what's interesting about his shop is they're finally like they've qualified themselves to buy a machine. And so now they're going through some different, you know, just kind of points of like check boxes that they have to hit. And I think Tyler does a really responsible job of thinking through everything. And so I think listeners are going to get a kick out of this one for sure. But first,
we've got a couple sponsors that help put on the show every single week that you guys should also check out. First up, Supacolor. Supacolor is the world's best heat transfer made for screen printers by screen printers. They understand the pressures and expectations of a screen printing business, and that's why they pride themselves on being super fast and super easy. Printava15, you guys know the code. Type it in. That gets you 15% off your first order. Here, you want to talk about Mr. Multicraft Daddy.
Have you heard of Multicraft _ Daddy? If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft Screen Printing and Digital Supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. Mention the Printavo podcast and receive an extra 10% off your first order. Dave and the team are giving away more than PMI tape. Every episode, they're going to be giving away like a whole bundle of things. And I think the value of that bundle is like $500 or $600. We're talking ink, emulsion, you name it. So go follow him, Multicraft _ Daddy. He'll pick out a new winner each week. Thanks so much, Dave. We appreciate you.
EasyWay, spending hours cleaning screens is a thing of the past with EasyWay screen printing and cleaning chemicals. Their innovative formulas are designed to work quickly and effectively, so you'll be spending less time cleaning and more time creating. Plus, EasyWay is a passionate company about they're all about empowering printers of all skill levels. They work with a ton of distributors, and they are just a great partner in your business to help you with how-tos, resources, and expert advice. Thanks, EasyWay and Alex and the team. Graphics?
What's up, Nick Wood? If you're listening to this, I love you. Thank you for texting me after every episode and telling me it was the best one yet. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, you go to 1900hotstuff.com, you hit up Nick Wood or Lucas, and they're going to set you up. GraphicSource offers industry-leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management softwares, and when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, there's no better company in our industry to work with. As you all know, we use GraphicSource quite a bit. And with over 30 years in the game, they really know and understand shop needs and have a proven track record of success. If you're not using them, you just stop what you're doing, listen to this podcast, like, subscribe, and hit them up to start using them. Mention the Printavo pod, get 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. You can use promo code PrintavoPod24. Thanks so much, GraphicSource.
All right, let's jump in.
All right.
We're live. Crack open the Diet Cokes, Ferg.
I got Celsius today.
Whoa.
What do we think of Celsius?
I'm confused because they market themselves as like fruit and healthy, and it's a Red Bull. It's 200 milligrams of caffeine.
Do not exceed 2 servings a day. Well, this is number 2.
Dude, any quote unquote healthy drink that says do not drink more than 2 of these a day.
It's got vitamin B12, B6, riboflavin. I think zero it's the modern, sodium, Bruce.
It's the modern Red Bull.
It's got taurine. Ooh.
It's the modern Red Bull. Is that what we're calling it now? That's truly what they put on their marketing.
Green tea leaf extract. I think they're pretty good.
Green
Look, there's right. bikes had, on there. I've
never had one. Oh, bikes! I'm into that.
There's a bike.
Oh, then I should have it. I should. Then I need it.
Oh, and yoga. And there's no surfing on here, Bruce. So you're out. You got your Spindrift.
I am out. Tyler, how's it going?
It's great, man.
I was good thinking. It's good to see you too. I was just finishing lunch downstairs real quick, and I was thinking about there's certain things that I get really fired up talking about business wise, different topics or ideas or whatever, and I like talking about those. And it could be lifestyle things too. If someone brings up a topic to you, business related, that and you're just like, wow, like you could go really deep on it, you get really excited about it. What is that
for me?
Yeah.
Gosh. I think, so right now we're super heavy into like mobile retail experience. So like I geek out every time Steven opens a new thing with, Campus Inc. And I'm always like digging through the video, seeing as much as I can, hope to see some of those in person soon. But like, yeah, we're in the process of building out mobile retail experiences for the cycling industry right now. So Whoa. If you're like, what draws people in to an experience outside of just the traditional retail experience, I can get super goofy on that. Like I will talk about that.
Hot and bothered.
Yeah. I get excited. Well, especially if someone's like, and you have no budget. I'm like, oh,
whoa. All right, Steven, you're in.
Bruce,
you
got to
show him a photo of you.
What do you like get besides coupon clipping? What do you get excited about?
Yeah, I mean, the CVS, when you scan it in and it's like extra care savings, 23 cents. Would you like to add? Yes. 7 cents. Would you like to add? Yes.
He's a coupon mom.
I like that.
What do you get excited about, Bruce?
I like Facebook Marketplace too. I would say some software as a service related, kind of in the weeds stuff, like when to hire a sales rep or, payback periods for that or success managers or, obviously always love deploying new features. That's always exciting. Talking about hiring and team structure is also really interesting. I've been going through the 4-hour work week, the book summary. So I ordered the Kindle book. So now I got to go through the details. I'll do the book summary, like an 8-minute YouTube video. If that one passes the test, and this one was just fascinating. So I wanted to dive more into that. It's really about one of the principles that I loved was he talked about the 80-20 principle in regards to your workday.
Yeah.
And so, 80% of the time you spend is not a useful time spent. Like you should be spending that 20% that like one major task for the day. That's what you should be spending your day to kick off on. And we tend to fill it up with, the 80% aspect. And we never really get to the most crucial pieces of it. So he also talked about really outsourcing stuff that is less valuable than you to do. So, if your hourly rate is $50 an hour and you can, value your time, then you should be spending someone, overseas for $5 an hour to do some menial tasks that don't really make a difference in the business for you to be able to do. So anyway, there's a lot of these topics. I got to read the actual book, then I'll give a summary.
This time next year.
There's no dates. I don't get dates anymore.
4-hour work week, 48 month book read.
There you go.
All right, TC, did you actually, did you start in California?
Yeah, I did. I was not far. Bruce, you're in Laguna?
No, I'm in Santa Monica, but...
I thought you were in Laguna for some reason. I was in Costa Mesa. That's where we started everything at.
Really? That's where you guys are from? Yeah. Or what was the impetus of starting the shop?
Yeah, we're from here. I was working out there, hated my job, hated what I was doing, but I had worked for a screen shop back like right after college. And so I was like, well, I'll just do that. And so I literally like started a screen shop the day after I quit my other, like my career. It was a full life change thing. So
How long ago was that?
Literally 14 years.
Oh, wow. I thought you graduated college 2 years ago. Okay.
No, few years beyond that.
Okay. If every like California to Arkansas.
Yeah.
Don't see that too often.
No. Well, it was Arkansas to California. Lived out there for 7 years. Ran the first 4 years of our business out there. Opened a location back in Arkansas because we were shipping so much back to where I was from because there wasn't a lot of great service providers. There's several great printers around now. So then got a buyout offer in California from a friend that I'd known for a long time. So I ended up selling that to him, moving back to Arkansas full time. And the market here was a lot more ripe for growth than Southern California for what we were doing. It's a hard market out there to grow this kind of business in, because mostly because real estate is so freaking expensive.
Wait, so you sold one of your shops then? I had no idea.
Yeah. And we haven't talked about it. It's,
wait, how long ago was that?
That was right at 10 years ago.
Could you spend a minute talking to us about the deal structure? Was it like just straight cash? Did you actually sweat it out? Like, I don't know. So I think that's really interesting. I don't hear that from a lot of people.
Yeah. The deal structure, it was a super simple deal structure. We weren't a massive shop. We were maybe doing $500,000 a year at that point. But it was a friend that I had met through like a church that I'd been a part of at the time. And then he worked for like Nike, Hurley, Quiksilver, like kind of all those companies. So he had a design background. He liked what we were doing. He wanted to just get into it and have that be his living. So he came to us and I was like, okay, well, I need liquidation value up front as cash. So liquidation, we just factored like, if we sold the company right now, if I just shut it down, what could we sell? All the equipment, and the location was great. I mean, it was just off of 17th Street in Costa Mesa, right behind Trader Joe's. Super easy to find. I mean, the leases there now are insane, but we had gotten this great lease with a great landlord. So we took the whole structure was like, it wasn't a lot, but we took liquidation value up front. And then we basically gave him an interest-free loan for, I think, 40 months and like set payments for 40 or maybe 36 months. I can't remember what the exact structure was. On that part, it's been a while, but yeah, so we did the deal and he took it over and it was great.
How did you value that payout part amount? So the total amount was that, I've seen a multiple of an EBITDA value. I've seen, it structured differently based on retention of clients. How did you come to that?
Yeah. So this was, substantially longer before I understood a lot of that. So even the other day, Steven was sending us, a couple of us are in a text group, and he was sending us something. I was like, okay, what does this phrase mean? And what does this phrase mean?
Adjusted.
I was like, I know what the first thing income is, but then you called it adjusted. And I was like, I don't even know what you adjusted. That
means
but,
magical.
It makes a lot more sense. It actually makes the company more valuable on paper, which is great. So I would love to have done an adjusted whatever we were talking about. We had a really good situation set up in Arkansas, to where we knew we had tons of growth opportunity. Somebody wanted what we were doing. It was going to be a hassle to get. We were literally flying back and forth every 6 weeks. So I was 6 weeks in California, 6 weeks in Arkansas, and I was just back and forth, taking care of my companies. You know, make sure people are right here, make sure people are right here, and just back and forth. So we got tired of that, really. And so we just said, hey, give us X amount of money based on it. I think it was equal to what we were taking in a year at the time. Now I would factor it differently. Might be worth more, might be worth less. But we were a very profitable company. We had zero debt. All of our equipment was owned outright. I mean, our lease rate was stupid. I think we got 2,400 square feet for like $2,000 a month, which in Costa Mesa at that time was silly cheap. So we were able to make a living pretty easily.
I don't know if I've shared this before of how I bought into Campus Anchor, Campus Sportswear, but it was very similar to that. Bruce, did I ever tell you about this?
No.
Maybe. So Jed doesn't use a Word document. He wrote this in Corel, listed out all of the equipment that we had, put liquidation value on it, and said, look, you got to give us, you know, all the money you've saved up from selling shirts. A third of that will be for the equipment. And so I was like, okay, you own a third of the equipment. And then he's like, the business is going to pay me and our other partner at the time every year. The first year, it's only going to be $4,000 each. The second year, it's going to be $8,000 each. The third year, it's going to be, you know, 12, 16, whatever. And essentially, he seller financed the business, actually paid it off. And I never really felt a lot of it except for that first initial chunk that I put up. I think that's, I learned that and I was like, oh, that's super cool. He like stair-stepped it so it wouldn't feel like it was stressful on the company. And it sounds like you did something similar.
Yeah, very similar. You know, the short end, and we won't get too far into this because this guy and I are still friends. He defaulted on it within like a year. We ended up, we won't go too deep, but he ended up paying us in chunks over time. It was a lot. There was a lot going on for him. And so
I guess that's the risk of the seller finance though, too.
That's the risk of the seller finance. But then you know what, to his credit, 10 years later, he decided to shut it down. Steven, you knew I was doing this last year. I was out California back and forth and he was like, hey man, I want to make this square. Super great guy. And he goes, hey, come take the equipment back. And so what I did, I flew out, cleaned up all the equipment, listed it on Craigslist. And so we were able to recover part of what was left. So it worked out. I'm not upset about it. He's a good guy. We're still friends. It just, you know, life happens.
Dang. Okay. You recently moved into a new facility, bought a facility, 57,000 square feet.
It's large. Yeah.
You bought it. Congratulations.
Yeah. It's a little different than Santa Monica.
That's big time.
It's big. Yeah. We had purchased land to build in the fall of 21. And then things kept happening and costs kept going up. Literally during the 6 months that they were drawing up the plans to build our 20,000 square foot building, the cost over doubled. Just everything was just shooting up. The cost of steel, the cost of concrete, the cost of glass. And it got to be an untenable amount for us. And so we still own that land. It is back on the market for sale. And so I went to my team and I said, hey, I want to look at a building that which was literally a quarter mile from our old spot. I want to look at it up the street. I think we should go take a look at this. I don't think we can make it work. I said, I think we can make this building really sing for us. It's 7 acres. It's 57,000 square feet with an outbuilding that's 10,000. Now it's in pretty rough shape. That one is, but it's still there. So we got land and acreage, and here within the next 2 months, we'll be operating in about 30,000 of the 57,000. So we're expanding our warehouse and e-com space right now.
Damn.
Yeah. okay. So it sounds like, you know, you guys are growing quickly. Why, what's the thought process of buying versus leasing a space then? If maybe it's unknown if this growth continues for you guys.
Yeah. So for us, it was so cheap that it didn't make, there was nothing available to lease on the market for, if I wanted 30,000 square feet elsewhere in Northwest Arkansas to lease, I would pay 3 to 4x what I'm paying as far as like a monthly on this thing. So it's substantially less expensive. We have the back 23,000 square feet in the back. And we have split that up into like commercial storage. So we have people paying us to rent out 1800 square foot units. So they are effectively making the building payment for us. So that's working out good.
You know what I learned? We've been looking at different spaces and evaluating some different things. And especially depending on the towns, like sometimes there's no logic to commercial real estate. And things go for like way less than appraised because they've been owned for 30 years and the owner just wants to get rid of it, or they need to quickly sell something because they need, you know, to move it into another thing. And so like when you get that opportunity, you kind of have to like, you're like, okay, we're going to totally pivot, move it. How do you, a 57,000 square feet, I mean, that has to be a 7-figure purchase just by guessing. How do you finance, you know, you're obviously growing your business. Now you're like, okay, I'm going to be a little bit of a landlord. I'm going to own this.
Yeah.
I'll grow into it. That's a whole nother like thing. How do you finance something like that? What were the steps that you took to figure out what you were able to do?
Yeah. So we've been playing in commercial real estate since we moved back to Arkansas back in 2014 full time. So we've been playing around. So we've actually owned our last 3 buildings that we were in. And in addition to the buildings next to us. So we've kind of utilized those. We got in at the right time to where we were buying things that are now worth 4 and 5 times what they are. Now, that's not 4 and 5 million. Like this is still a very small town in rural Arkansas. Now, 30 minutes away from here is the University of Arkansas Walmart headquarters. We have an office over in that area. Like, so this same building in Bentonville, Arkansas, which is where the headquarters of Walmart is, all the major vendors, this same building would cost, well, it wouldn't exist, number one. It just doesn't exist on the market, period. Like, even if you wanted to buy it, it doesn't exist. Like, warehousing in Northwest Arkansas is like at a less than 2% vacancy rate. So there's a big need for warehousing here. But in Siloam Springs, there were three effectively fully like abandoned warehouses. Like this one, we had actually looked at 4 years before and it was empty then. They had a caretaker taking care of it, but which of course that's what a caretaker does, they had someone taking care of it, but they were just ready to get out of it. He was moving out of the area. He was done with this property. We poured as much cash as we had into the purchase because we had to put like 15-20% up front. So, and I kind of balanced, we could get out of the deal all the way until like 7 days before it. So we structured it to where we can pull the ripcord at the last second if we need to. I waited until the appraisal came in 3 weeks before closing to see what the building was worth. And the building was going to be worth double what we owed it once the deal closed. So I was like, okay, I will put all my cash into this because it's the best bet we're ever going to make from an investment standpoint, right? So we put a substantial portion of money in, but the building, we had instant equity that we could then borrow against for the business if we needed to. So that's kind of how that worked for us. So it was a risk, but it was like a comfortable risk. Like we were the biggest, scariest purchase we've ever made, right? But we felt good about it because the upside was so good for us in the immediate, but also way down the line.
How do you think about expansion with the building, Stephen, with you guys in lease first buy versus expand existing? I don't know what the market is. Maybe you can explain the market too in Champaign, Illinois, because it sounds like there's extra space by Tyler, which helps.
Yeah.
I would love for Stephen to come down here.
So we are in rural Illinois, but we're in a college town. And there is a high demand for commercial real estate or in light industrial. The way that, you know, I look at the wealth that I'm going to make from kind of like twofold when I think about this long term. I own my building right now. And so we got it out of steel 5-6 years ago. I can have that forever. It can help me retire. I can sell it for a large amount of money. And that's one way that Stephen plans to make money. The other way that Stephen plans to make money is hopefully something with Campus Inc. down the road, you know, 5-10 years, someone bigger comes in and swallows it for a large amount of money. So I start to look at it and say, am I going to spend too much time trying to make money on real estate and I should focus on my business? Or should I just rent right now? And not worry about real estate and maybe build later. And so I think, TC, you're kind of playing both angles. You're like, I want to make good money on my real estate so I have long-term income, but I'm also going to grow my business. You know, like I think shops have to realize, like, if your business isn't going to be worth anything when you're ready to sell it, invest in your real estate because that is a tangible asset that can be appraised and sold for a certain dollar amount. That's kind of how I think about it in my head. I don't know if that makes sense, Bruce.
Yeah, because for us, if someone came in right now to buy us out, I would probably only sell them the business, but then lease them the building. So like it's a long-term play for us from that standpoint. I wouldn't sell them the whole thing with the building. It wouldn't make sense.
In addition with the warehouse buildings, is there two storefront stores? Because you mentioned you guys also have an office by Walmart and then maybe that's the one you're in now.
No, I'm actually in our headquarters right now. So I've got an office here and then we have a like small retail storefront slash like, it's like a micro version of the front of house here at TC. We literally took it and everything we built here and just made it, you know, a third size and put it in about 1,000 square feet over in Bentonville. It's walkable to the new Walmart headquarters that's being finished up right now. It's in the middle of like kind of the downtown arts and business district. So there's a lot, like a whole lot of our clients. We basically just drew a circle, like where are most of our clients in that area? And we just said, where can we go in the middle of that? And so a lot of our clients in Bentonville ride their bikes to come see us and have meetings. It's great. Like it's a very bike friendly infrastructure. So it's, and deliveries are easy and all that.
So you almost created like outposts, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. They don't have to come to our headquarters. They don't have to drive 30 minutes to come to Siloam. They can get the same experience, samples, service, everything in a smaller environment in Bentonville.
And so, but you have to pay for one full-time employee to be there basically to manage that location, or how does that work?
Yeah. So we put one of our project managers over there, but we also have a couple of people that work hybrid for us, like in the office here. But then they'll work out of our Bentonville office a couple days a week because it's like closer to where they live. I keep setting off things like, did balloons just pop up on the screen?
I think balloons just popped up.
I made a hand gesture. I will stop making hand gestures. It's like that. I bet really, really distracting. I'm so sorry. So they can work in and out of there. And then we have one of our artists over there 2 days a week as well. So if a comer wants to come meet with an artist, we will track them in for a timetable when we know there's going to be an artist there. So they can say, what day is best for me to come by? We said, oh, we'll have an artist in house on Tuesday and Thursday. So we always have two people in that office.
And how many employees are you at right now?
We just hired two. So we're trying to do that. I think we're at 16 people right now.
Gotcha. Yep. Bruce, what were you going to say?
Would you open another office like that to say, hey, geographically, we could tackle these sales. They tend to be more locally driven. So if we have a presence, then we can capture more of the market.
If the market made sense, because for us, we found that people in Bentonville like that we have an office there. Even if they don't ever step foot in the door, they like that office is there. And we know that because they told us that. They may never meet with us. They may only do everything over phone call and email, since 2020. Most of our clients are phone call and email, but they like that we have it there. They like knowing it's there. They like it for quick pickups too. I mean, if they have a small order and they just want to swing by somewhere, they would rather that than a delivery van half the time. I don't know why. If the market was right and it made sense, absolutely, I'd do another one.
The reason we can't go an episode without talking about DTF, so we're gonna have to switch gears here.
That's
everyone
okay.
Prepared. TC, our conversations as of late have been this overwhelming amount of discussion on should you pull a trigger on the DTF. And your business is really interesting because you've niched into like, there's like the whole cycling arm of what you all do. You have kind of like outposts. You're also setting up like mobile units for different events that you guys do, because I know you guys go do on site.
Yep.
Can we talk about how much of your business today is heat pressed?
Yeah, it's a lot more than it was. It used to be we would have two or three things a week that were heat pressed. We were cutting vinyl in-house or printing like on our Roland. What were those called? Like, we called them heat seals. Printable vinyl is all it was. And now we run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think we had 8 or 9 double-sided heat presses now. Of various types, like tag presses and full 16x20s. And we have some that are just permanently set up for sleeves, some that are permanently set up for tags, and then hats and stuff. So it's definitely all day, every day now. Whereas it used to be maybe 4 to 6 hours a week involved heat presses.
What so are those types of jobs size-wise?
Yeah.
It varies from, 20 pieces or 15 pieces for clients that could talk us out of our minimums, we have multiple 250 piece DTF jobs, this week. So tote bags, and we've got this rodeo came to us. They do a big order every year, and they wanted this thing that we probably in the past would have printed, sim process. But they only wanted 250 of them, and it just the project wasn't going to work right for setting up sim process for a couple different reasons. And we said, well, let's try this DTF. And so we brought in DTF. We did it like 5 or 6 different ways, and then just picked the version of art that we liked that had the best look and the best hand, and we went with that. So that's another 250 pieces. But the front left chest is one color, so it'll get screen printed and then film on the back. But they've done a good job to where I'm having a hard time starting to tell the difference. We're taking tips from our buddies.
So now you are thinking about buying a DTF.
Yes.
I have a feeling you'll buy one in the next 60 days, but I'm just guessing. What amount of, like, can we talk through your thought process? Do you guys do any on-demand e-commerce fulfillment also?
A little. We do like team stores. We do a store. We call them team stores. We do stores through Printavo merch. We use that pretty often. We're actually getting ready to go full wide. So you mentioned cycling. We're heavy in cycling in a specific youth program called NICA. And so in 2 weeks, we're calling 500 teams to offer them all team stores, utilizing the merch platform off of Printavo. And a lot of that will be done with film, or we call it film, DTF. Yeah, whatever term we're using.
It would have been nice if they just kept calling it film. Wouldn't it be nice if Printavo merch stores had custom fields at checkout? Anyways.
We're not here to talk about Bruce.
Yeah. Okay. What is your rationale about, like, what has your thought process been about finally buying this piece of equipment? Can you walk us through inside your brain for the last year, 6 months, day?
Yeah. So, I mean, Steven, you and I talk a lot, and the guys that we're in a chat group with talk about data-driven decisions a lot, right? So for us, especially at the end of last year, we said, well, look up how much we spent on DTF. And it was in the tens of thousands, you know, high tens of thousands, right? So we looked at that and we said, oh, that's a whole lot on DTF. And that would have been for like a year. I think Allison did the math, and it was January 1 of 23 to December 1, if you will. That's when we pull all the data together.
Are we talking like 20,000 or like 80,000? Give us
like 50,000-60,000.
Okay. So yeah, or five grand a month. Okay.
Yeah. It was a good amount of money. But you know, the hangups for us were the weight, even when they're turning it around quick. We use stalls for a lot of that. We've utilized everyone to some degree. Fusion, stalls, Supercolor. We've used them all for various things. But even if we get it fast, fast is 4 days, right? Fast is like that's fast. It's three to 4 days, depending on if you can hit their ship times and their drop times and all that. So for us, the biggest thing for us is speed. And especially for like the roadie order we just did, I would have loved to have been able to pull those five different tests all at once and been able to say, all right, we're going to do these five tests. And, you know, 30 minutes later, we could have all of the tests right in front of us, press them. We could tweak things. We could change things and run different options to get the best effect possible. I don't like the guesswork of even if you get your system down really, really, really good, it still feels like guessing when you send that file out and hope they come in just right. Hope it comes in consistent to even the one sample that you ordered the week before. So now I know that it's mostly about control. It's a little bit of cost savings overall. We'll see if it's actually cost savings once we get it in house. But even if it's a break even on the cost of the transfers themselves, with our time and maintenance and all that, the speed is the biggest thing for me, and being able to sample and test in-house versus having to wait 4 days every time I want to test something.
Steven, rebuttal or
no, I'm just I really okay. The reason I admire this is your thought process. There's a lot of wisdom behind your thought process. So like the first stepping stone was we are spending $50,000 to $60,000 a year on transfers. And so now it's like DTF machine, you have entered the equation, right? Yeah. And now you started to think about, okay, I would like it because it would help me with QC and I could get to market faster and I could be able to do all of these things. So now that you're in this conversation, I guess you are considered a qualified shop. What are the next conversations that you're... Right. Cause I went to DTF Expo and man, there are so many unqualified buyers buying machines, and that I cringe. Right. And so
unqualified printers pressing DTF. There's a lot of that out there, right?
Or unqualified garage shops that think if I buy a machine, I'll automatically start selling, when it's like, start selling and order your transfers. That's for another day.
Or they're putting it on everything. That's super annoying.
But. Like, you know, six panel hats, and it's like, no, doesn't work.
No.
Can you tell us what your thought process is now? What are the things that you're thinking about, research that you've done? Why haven't you pulled the trigger sooner?
Yeah.
Talk to us about that right now.
I wanted, so we've done DTG for a number of years. We've been in the DTG game for, gosh, 12 years now. And we've, from back in the GT 541 era, CMYK only, all the way through the 381 series and now into the GTX series. So we've kind of been through the whole game and we've been with Brother the whole time. The best thing I like about it is I like a purpose-built machine. I like a machine that was made to do what it does. And I know that for the longest time, I was like, I'm not buying a hacked up machine. I'm not buying a machine that was made to print paper that they're somehow figuring out how to push these other inks through onto this other kind of paper. That has never made sense to me. I don't like it. I've been really happy with Brother, but Brother built a purpose-built DTG machine. Their heads are made to print on Garm. Everything, their heads are made for the inks that they're delivering, the substrates that they're printing on. Like, that is what those machines are made for. So for us, I wanted to wait until I don't know how to say this other than a reputable company brought a purpose-built machine market. And I think we're starting to see that with Roland, Mamaki, some of these larger name companies are saying, okay, we are now making machines that are specifically made for this. And along with that, you get the service network and you get the parts availability and all that stuff. So I wasn't willing to experiment on the front end with machines that are good machines, that are fast machines, that are putting out great prints. I can't have it be something I have to mess with. I need it to be something that just does its damn job.
Rebuttal, rest your case.
Are you saying
Steven's
this?
Been through them, so
I know, but that's why I'm kind of bringing this up is like, because I guess I'm curious, Steven, on like the thoughts of the time, the cost time trade-off, and because you always talk about a lot of the maintenance aspect and the color matching issues, and I guess you had to figure out the machines before.
So for us, a direct-to-film printing was an unlock for our business. We would not be able to do what we do today without DTF printing, period. So I was actually like diving in headfirst as fast as possible, trying to break it and iterate because it was the only unlock for our business, right? We could not. And so for you guys at TC, it's not necessarily an unlock. It's just like it's going to add a convenience. It might add a cost saving, but it's not the linchpin to 10x your business, right?
No,
it's just like a tool in your belt. You kind of said like, I just want things to work. Is that from scar tissue of like, I'm done in my life being that guy? No, really, like, because you and Justin Lawrence have said the same thing. Like,
yeah,
where is that coming from?
Justin and I were texting about DTF machine purchasing 30 minutes ago. So this is
he texted me yesterday something too. This morning I got a quote from him. Yeah,
I'll have to send you I screwed up. I had him pushing back on price on something, but it was not. I was wrong. That was my fault. Anyways, so for us, I just needed to work. We run a pretty, when I say lean, not necessarily in the methodology of lean, but we run a pretty lean shop here. Everybody here,
no offense,
kind of
Scott.
Knows. No offense to Scott. Scott, no offense, King Screen. No, but we run a pretty lean company here where you come in and you may get asked that day to go pull on press or stack shirts in the dryer, regardless of what part of the company you're in. And that has just allowed us. Number one, it gives everybody an appreciation for the process. But number two, it's allowed us to keep our team probably smaller than we should at times. But it feels a little safer for what we're trying to do. All that to say is for me, I don't think it's built out of scar tissue. It's just built out of I just don't want to deal with it. Like, I like things that work. We were talking about cars the other day in our text group. And I was just like, I'm a pretty utilitarian guy. Like, I like for things to just work and not fuss with them. And that's how I am with cars. That's how I am with equipment. So I'm really proud of the fact that most of the equipment we have here, outside of a very particular piece of equipment that Steven knows about going down constantly, we don't have down days, but we buy into that. So our embroidery equipment doesn't go down. Like, it's not a sell point to me. If something's user serviceable, I don't want to have to service it. Like, I don't want to deal with
what's that piece of equipment that goes down?
Does it start with A, B, C, D, E, F, G? Okay, never mind. Everyone can guess.
Yeah, you know.
I don't even remember what it is.
They sent us a replacement, and it is working flawlessly. So credit to companies who take care of people.
Tyler, what if you were to guess, what percentage of your sales are screen printing versus DTF, just on the apparel kind of printing side? If you outsource some work, you can bunch it under screen printing then.
Yeah, I mean, DTF is still 15% of our business. It's not between screen printing and DTF, it's probably 15%. It's used as a tool. It's used as a, hey, can we push this over to film? Especially when we're busy and we're like, this will work fine either way. Can we push this over to film is a question we ask a lot.
I'm curious if you've thought about, okay, so like in your head, you're still wrestling with it. You're pretty much pot committed as long as the equipment's going to be good. When it goes down, you're probably going to be like freaking out a little bit. Just fine. I'm waiting for that day.
Yeah. Well, you keep telling me that's what's going to happen and I trust you. So.
Well, whenever you guys say you want to buy one, I just send you a picture of like my ink lines exploding.
Dude, that picture of the caked up ink was my favorite thing. I showed it to Allison. She goes, are we sure we're going to do this? And I was like, this is not the machine we're buying.
And then Justin sent it to the company and goes, will my machine do this the same way Stevens does? And I think he said it in a little more of a provocative way. And it was a good laugh. But are you thinking about future unlocks? Like, are there avenues in your business that now that you guys have developed a good, strong business with good presence, that now you can use the DTF machine to do some things like that are new and different?
Yeah, new and different for sure. I think for us, transitioning a lot of the cycling industry product that we're doing, a lot of the Nike industry product we're doing is, we're doing these merchandising programs where we have people on site selling stuff at these like youth, like high school age cycling races. But we find that higher color stuff sells more. People like all the flair and all the color on the stuff we sell. So refills for that, or even initial runs, if it makes sense for the garment, we may push more of that over in order to make it easier to do refills throughout the season, to make those turns quicker. That's the big, it's like I said, I keep going back to speed. So for us, you know, like we do Idaho's league, right? And they've got 1300 kids in this league, 900 of them are showing up for races. The whole race weekend has like 3000 people buying merch at it. And the most popular design literally has seven screens. Well, we experimented at the end of the season. I took that design, did it in DTF and put it side by side in front of my teams. And I said, which do you like better? They're like, oh, we like them both. They're great. And I'm like, all right, we're going to go film next year because I think people will like either one, which means during their seven race season, it's 7 weeks in a row. So I am sending out restocks every Monday to get there by Thursday for their next race. I can turn those a lot quicker on a Sunday evening or a Monday morning and have fresh product to them quicker instead of having to like double up and wait for screens every 2 weeks.
Bruce, do you got anything? I've got something here.
Yeah. Is it cheaper? Is it cheaper to run that or no? Like time-wise, labor-wise.
For us?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Substantially. Like a 7-screen order with setup and everything. I mean, just making the screens is going to take you for 25, 30 minutes, setting them up, taping them off. You're going to set the whole job up. I mean, from blank screen to press ready is an hour and a half. And I can have a reorder of 48 pieces pressed in 30 minutes.
Tyler, have you ever thought about sending them the transfers, the shirts, and the heat press?
So
the work?
Yes. Yeah. Here, put this together. We have thought about it. So I can only do so many transactions during the day, and we have experimented with, we've done a lot of on-site printing in the past. I find that I can push more transactions with ready-made product on site, because we have these little tiny windows. I don't get to set up a store on site for multiple weeks where people can filter through. I've got 7 hours on Saturday, 7 hours on Sunday, and that's it. So even on like the big championship weekends, we're doing 2 to 3 registers and we're doing a transaction every 45 seconds to 1 minute.
Wow.
And yeah, so we're pumping through product. It's a financial risk up front, but we've got like 5 years of data on this. So we've gotten really good at guessing. But also now when we run out, we allow people to place those orders on site and ship it to them. Oh, we'll ship it to you for free. We're out. And 9 times out of 10, they choose, oh, I'll just take that. I don't want to carry that sugar.
Is that better pricing by doing that? Because they feel it's a kind of retail experience.
We take a little bit of a hit because we offer to ship it for free.
Ignoring the shipping part. Okay. If the on-site aspect versus
when you're setting up retail where you're taking the inventory risk.
Yes.
Is the pricing better for you guys? Of what you charge to the cyclers, to your end customer?
We definitely make a little bit better margin per piece. And like that opportunity cost, that time cost in there, that's the biggest one, is that I can move more pre-printed shirts, in a shorter period of time versus pressing them. Now we are experimenting with, hey, buy this shirt and then go over to this extra tent. We've got a volunteer in there and you can press custom sleeves on it and we'll do transfers for that kind of thing. But that will be literally be as a value add and like a spirit and stoke builder. Like it won't be necessarily profitable outside of, and I keep doing gestures.
That's awesome. That's awesome. There were just fireworks there. There were just fireworks. That's incredible. But I think we're
touching nothing.
So we're experimenting with that right now, where we're helping our retailers hedge inventory risk by giving them the equipment and the supplies to be able to heat press on site in their actual storeroom. And there's so many things that we're trying to solve. But the lesson, or like the thing that I wanted to raise, and I think I talk about this at Print Hustlers, is like the second or third iteration of technology will uncover some of its most useful cases. And I was reading something from like Mark Andreessen, and he said an awful lot of successful tech companies ended up being in a slightly different market than they started out in. Microsoft started with programming tools but became an operating system. Oracle started doing contracts for the CIA. AOL started out as an online video gaming network. And so that's why I was just kind of asking, is like, when you get this new tool or technology, are you going to be thinking about the like, what's next? What can I unlock? What can I do differently?
And maybe you don't even know to those aspects. Like I can't imagine AOL, you know, starting off with video games didn't think they were going to be a internet service provider.
Yeah, I think we always look for byproducts in business. What do we have that we could make something else with, or are we make something else that can be pushed off into another product? If you've read through Sam Walton's biography, he talks about was it Sam Walton's biography where they talked about the byproduct of Henry Ford's Model T dashboards being what formed Kingsford Charcoal. They took all these piles of wood pucks and like all these things that they cut out. And they said, we have literally warehouses full of this stuff. What do we do? And they came up with a process to turn that extra thing, that thing that they were creating, into charcoal briquettes. And that's how Kingsford Charcoal was born, which is like the number one supplier of that. So this isn't quite the same, but as far as like looking for byproducts in our business, yeah, if we get a new tool, I'm going to go, what else can we do with this thing? Where else can we put this in? So for us, maybe we're not doing on-site printing all season at these races, but maybe it's a part of their championship. And now it's a value add. It's a piece of stoke that we bring to one event a year. Oh, they do the custom stuff at the last race. And so it's because if we do it at every race, so because we're dealing with like teenage, like buying psychology too, and they get bored if it's that offered at every race. They don't care about the wow factor of it. And we don't really have an opportunity for a back room at these places. We don't have a stock room that we can put things in. It's just a 10-foot by 20-foot tent or a big 30-foot trailer that we're building. But I do like the wow factor of it being made in front of people. And I think we will find ways to utilize that for sure.
The last thing I want to talk about is you get fired up. You talked about the very beginning on pop-up retail experiences. Can you just explain a little bit more like what those are and what they have to do with TC?
Yeah. So, we started working in the cycling industry with Nika specifically. Their whole philosophy is more kids on bikes. I'm super into cycling. My kids are going to be riding for Nika. So for us, it was a passion project at the beginning. They were buying stuff from us. We were selling them product. They were selling it at races. They weren't making any money. They were making sacrifices on quality of stuff in order to hit a certain price point. So I went to them and said, hey, what if we just took this over and did, like, I called it a collegiate level store on site at your races. And we just sold stuff and gave you a percentage at the end. And one league took a risk and said yes. And then 4 years later, we're in 19 of those states doing this all over the country. And so for us, I want whatever we do to add to the mission of Nike at the end of the weekend. So it's a little bit mission-based, right? It's not so much, there is business to it, because I want these leagues to feel like we are an indispensable part of their weekend. Like, we are what one of many things that help make that weekend great, that helps get more kids on bikes for life. That's what their whole philosophy is. And so for us, we started looking at, okay, we've done the merch tents, people like it, but how can we bring more of an experience that kind of floats around to these different races? So right now we're in the process of building out, it's a 24-foot box trailer. The whole side of it folds down and basically forms an entire, you end up with about a 16 by 24 foot retail store on site, to where they can cut, you set it up just like a small store. And they can come in and shop and experience. There's a little lounge, because the whole back of the trailer opens up, forms an outdoor lounge that kids can hang out in. But it won't be at every race, right? So we're hoping to build a couple of these over time. We're building the first one right now. And it will be something that pops around to different races and definitely hits their championship race at the end of the season, where everybody is. So for us, it's a value building, add.
Are you building this? Are they paying you for it? Are you bringing this to them? Like, I instantly thought, like, oh, a shipping container could move around. And you're like, no, I'm going to make like a carnival, literally.
Yeah.
Are you financing? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So we've been traveling in Sprinter vans that are built out, so our people can have an inexpensive place to stay. It's kind of nice. I say inexpensive, the vans aren't, but we've got to get to these venues anyway with all the products. So we've built these vans out that are like sleeping deck, small kitchen, living space. But under the sleeping deck is where all the tents and the product and everything is stored under the bed area. This is deeper than we've talked about before, Stephen. So,
Whoa, that's really cool.
We've been traveling in those for 4 years and they're great. Well, they're also really valuable, like more valuable than what we put into them. So we have actually sold a couple of those in order to finance this new thing, because we made a profit on them. So we're able, like ATC is the company, they make these trailers ready made, and then you can just take them and kit them out and wrap them and build the interior out however you want. So they're not cheap, but I think beyond just the leagues loving us, we want the teams to love us, because the team business is how we open the team stores. And if we can continue to build that out and build that up, it will be like the profit when I sell a shirt in a team store versus the profit when I sell to someone walking in getting 25 of something made is substantial. It's retail revenue. But we own the means of production, so our markup is really healthy. So I can have a much lower COGS on those sales, right? And justify kind of these larger capital purchases, because it makes us indispensable in these areas. It's a lot. Sorry, that was
no. That's super cool.
I get really excited about it because I like the numbers end of it, like figuring out, be like, oh, but we can do this, and it totally pays for itself. And the cool factor is off the charts. The cool factor is very, very high.
Bruce, we were listening to that podcast, Jason Lemkin. Lemkin, pretty awesome, prolific founder, and has a bunch of awesome startup stories. But he said the next version of what you sell should be worth way more than what you're originally selling. And so it's like, if you went out to sell a $10 t-shirt, now turn that into a $50,000 experience. Right? Like, don't just go to try sell more $10 t-shirts. And from what I can hear is like, you know, we've done it a little bit in tents and camper vans. And now it's like, we're going to bring it. And it'll be interesting to see the ROI swing on being able to afford that. But it's like, you're not going laterally, you know, which I think is really, really neat.
Yeah. So there will not be debt associated with this. So it's super cool. So that's how we're able to do it and not freak out. But yeah, I mean, we're doing it number one because we love the mission of the organization. NYCA is like, we don't even hardly work with other youth sports orgs anymore. I mean, they are, if you want to know more about them, I'm going to plug them, look them up. They're phenomenal. It's Youth Mountain Biking, NYCA, N-I-C-A. And for us, it's giving them what we feel like this underserved like youth sports organization deserves. But also we know that in the end, it ends up being really good for our company too. So
Tyler, where do people follow along the van life trailer, amazing cycling experience journey? Do you share this stuff on Instagram?
Yeah. We share a little bit of it on Instagram. Instagram, we're not on the TikToks, but who knows if that exists 6 months from now. So that's that, right? Instagram, largely, you can follow us, TC Screen Printing.
All right, Tyler, we appreciate you being able to share so much. Print Hustlers, we appreciate you guys joining us in for another episode. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.